Are you trying to find the sports fan in your life the perfect holiday gift? Why not think about tickets to the 8th annual Evening with the Cardinals coming up on January 11th at St. Louis Union Station Grand Ballroom. This year it features Ted Simmons and Ozzie Smith. Dinner, auction, private photo session with the two legends, and hear them reminisce about their careers. Get your tickets at thenccs.org. That's thenccs.org. It's an Evening with the Cardinals, January 11th. TheNCCS.org. It's a Ben Fred Friday, STLCriminalDefense.com, and that's the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty. Head to their website, STLCriminalDefense.com, the exclusive sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com and Ben Fred Fridays, which is a visit every Friday with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And I got to give you a compliment, my man.
All right, these are rare.
I was looking through the... What do you mean?
I'm just teasing. No, please.
You know I love your
please
work.
Continue with the compliment. I'm
so
eager.
I was looking through the analytics of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. I said, okay, this one got a lot of listens. This one get. I'm telling you what, man, your Friday mornings get a lot of listens.
People
lot
are
of
ready
downloads.
For the, people are ready for the weekend.
I think it's part of it. I think people know that every Friday early, it's out,
yeah,
and we're covering the news of the day and what happened and what may happen.
Our witty banter, I'm sure, draws them in like honey.
Well, who wouldn't want to hear a couple of guys just that have no insight talk? No, we have plenty of insight, and that's why we have you on. So thanks
hot,
for everything.
It's the hot takes. That's what it is.
I mean it. You do a hell of a job with the Post.
Thanks,
and,
man.
And these are great, so I appreciate everything you do. Merry Christmas to you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Back Let's. It's not a good Thanksgiving if you're in the Odom family right
tough.
Now. It's
yeah.
a tough one. Let's start with just a general comment. Your thoughts on the firing of Barry Odom.
Yeah, I think it was, we saw it coming, right? I mean, we talked last week about kind of laying it out there, what Jim Stirk had to decide. First of all, I should say that I like Barry Odom a lot. And I think, I don't think I know that he really wanted to succeed at Mizzou. He had black and gold in his heart, and you know, I think he wanted it to happen, and a lot of people there did too. Although watching this season and comparing it to the expectations that everyone had going in, I see why Jim Stirk made the decision. This football team was supposed to win 9-10 games. This football team was supposed to, you know, be that top 25 team that Jim Stirk said he wanted since he's come on board at Missouri, and it kind of gave it away. It lost the season opener. It rendered that bowl ban discussion really, really kind of moot. You know, that wasn't a thing that could be talked about in Jim Stirk's campaign against the NCAA because the football team gave it away, you know, almost, you know, pretty much in week one. The 5-game home winning streak was immediately followed by the disaster at Vanderbilt, and it just seemed like every time there's a little momentum, the bottom dropped out, and this wasn't the year for that. So, you know, between that and the discipline issues on the field, not off the field, but on the field.
Absolutely.
And the just complete, you know, ice age of the offense under a coordinator that Barry Odom hired, I think he had enough reason to say, hey, you know, I've got to put my stamp on this program. But the question is now, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, is that you can't just fire Barry Odom and go out and hire a guy who does not move the needle more than Barry Odom. Barry Odom was a likable coach, and he was about Mizzou. He played there. Like, you need to nail this hire if you're going to make that move, because Stirk had a lot of reasons if he wanted to. If Barry was his guy, he could have brought him back. He could have said, look, this NCAA thing hung over our head. He could have said, we're going to fire Derek Dooley, and a lot of this was on the offense, so we'll get a better coordinator. There are a lot of reasons. Kelly Bryant was hurt. He could have played that card, and I thought he might, but he didn't. And this is on him now to go out and get a better hire, because Barry Odom was likable. He had some traction in recruiting. But if Jim Stirk is going to say this isn't good enough, then you better go get someone who clearly is better.
I am a big believer in sports and continuity. Now, I say that with an asterisk in which I say that continuity is good with Barry Odom. I didn't like the firing of Barry Odom. I think you needed to wait till he got another class through. And let me explain myself here. In pro sports, I think with the immediacy now of people saying, now you have to win, I get it. And you can change the complexities of a franchise quickly. In pro sports, if you want to go out and spend money and spend it wisely and make the right decisions, you can bring the guys in and you can win. In college sports, especially in football, I think minimum 4 years. Barry had 4. And then I always think it's 5 or 6. And if you stay with that, you will see the fruits of that patience. I would love to have seen him have one more year. Clearly, players that played at Mizzou, played with him, teammates, guys that are around the program, they wanted to see him stay. You think that's fair? I mean, to say
The players loved him. The problem was the players never played like they were playing for his job. That was the issue. But everyone who knows Barry, even if they questioned his ability to get there, didn't question his desire and didn't question his you know, want to. And I think that's why a lot of people saw this and went, oh, this doesn't feel right.
This was a bad year. I'm not going to say it was a good year because it was a terrible year, even though they would have been bowl eligible. But it wasn't a good year. And I think if you look at the overall body of work with the record, and people can say, well, he won X amount of games, some of that was against FPS, and, you know, it wasn't great. I get that. But I still think you need time to bring in your people and how you want it. And I still will go back, and I don't think enough has been made of where the program was when he got there and the political climate that he was dealing with in recruiting. And that was big. And I think people kind of ho-hum it. And that was a tough year. And it takes a year or two to get through those kind of things so you can go get the kids and convince them that this is the place to be in. And if I'm reading it wrong, Ben, correct me, but that's how I really believe that it needs to be looked at.
I think it was a big deal, the state of where the program was when Barry came on board. And all you have to do is point to Barry coming on board. Missouri went out after Gary Pinkel announced his retirement and looked for other coaches.
Yes.
Mac Rhodes led a search and did not find anybody he felt was more capable or more willing to take the job. A lot of people said, we're not going to come take this job because of the climate on campus. But, you know, that was, I think, factored into the first season, the second season. And I think this season was really the one where everybody agreed, including Odom, that this was supposed to be the breakthrough.
So did you think it was the right move?
I think it was the right move if Sterk goes out and lands a great hire. That's my condition, and I hope that's not hedging, because here's the thing. Sterk knew he was going to do this by the time Missouri took the field against Arkansas.
Absolutely. If
you saw the way Barry Odom acted on the sideline, taking photos with his players and his assistants, he knew this was happening. He might not have been told yet, but he knew, and Sterk clearly knew.
I was watching the game, by the way, and at the end, just to interrupt, when he's hugging guys, I looked at it, I go, that's dead man walking. He's done.
And you could even sense in the conversations leading up the past couple weeks, he was almost becoming more cerebral and I think at peace with it. Now, is he happy he got fired? Hell no. But I think he saw the writing on the wall a little bit. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because Sterk did not wake up on that Saturday morning and go, I got to go find a football coach. He's been thinking about this as the season progressed.
Well, he should have been thinking about it the day that he hired Barry Odom, and he should think about
he didn't hire Barry.
Well, the day that he took on,
I think, part of the thing here.
But my point is, you think about that the day that he hires whatever the next coach is.
Yes.
What's my short list?
Yes. So if he goes out there and fumbles around and, you know, finds out all these guys are not interested and has to go out and hire a coach that doesn't impress anybody, then you're going to have to view the decision to fire Barry with that complete knowledge. I don't have any problem with Sterk saying, look, you know, I want a top 25 team. Year four, it's not getting there. Barry's been ranked twice. He immediately lost the next game to an underdog. That's not going to get us where we want to go. I don't like seeing 3 5-game losing streaks in 4 seasons. I don't like seeing undisciplined play on the field, and I don't like seeing an offense completely go off the grid because a quarterback gets hurt, and that's who Barry hired. So all those are sound reasons, but you have to, you know, if you're gonna say we're pulling the plug on this, and this is a guy who took the job in part because he loves this place, and in part because we couldn't get anybody better. If we're going to pull the plug on that growth, then you better plant somebody in there who's A, either really exciting and is going to instantly jolt this thing, or B, is proven and is going to just, with the experience and the success that they bring into the position, is going to immediately raise the profile. There aren't a lot of candidates who do one of those two things. There are a lot of candidates who I think will be met with kind of a, you fire Barry for this guy, and that's the one that Sterk has to avoid.
Are.
That's
Tell
the one that Sterk has to avoid.
Well, before we get into the candidates, I want one AD at some point, whether it be with a basketball firing or a football firing, because that's your money revenue.
Yep.
I want one AD to come out and say, when he's at a press conference, and say, well, and a member of the media says, what search committee are you using? I want that AD to say, I'm not using a search committee. And if I ruffle feathers along the way, tough. This is my job, and this is my job to make sure that we're put in the best position to win games. My job was a short list of people to have, and I'm going to go out to do that, and I know how much money I have, and I don't need a search committee to tell me who the best person is for my university. I'd love to hear an AD actually do that. I know it won't happen. And so I'm already looking at my next line of business to be Scoops Incorporated search committee.
Hey, don't pay me
$100,000 to go do that.
Don't trash the search committees. I was thinking we could start one. It's just basically get on Twitter.
It's a joke.
Here's the deal.
I understand why you do them, but come on.
There's a few reasons, and I'm with you. I agree 100%. I've written about this before. It's one of the big. There are a lot of shams in college athletics, and this is one of them. They say it's mostly to protect privacy, to help coordinate interviews in and out. They get leaked anyway. Okay,
Jim
because
Sturt
everybody's
just said,
got an agent.
Everybody's got
people at the airport watching.
I am not
watching.
Talking about this.
Right.
Until we hire the next guy. Great.
Right. But here's the deal.
So great. Go to Jimmy Sexton and get some quotes from an agent and agent X, Y, and
well,
Z. Great.
We'll have to
I don't
talk
care.
About Sexton's influence on this coaching
oh, it's
carousel
big.
Again. It always is, but this was especially unique. The search committees, they try to secure privacy. They try to, I think, give hiring schools some leeway. You can kind of always pass a bad hire off on the search committee a little bit. Also, a lot of former athletic department people go work for search committees when they're done.
Of course they do.
So there's kind of a I scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of thing going on there too. But I agree, it's a joke. But you know,
isn't that your job?
Totally.
I mean, isn't your?
They've
you
been
think about it.
They've
you
been
think.
Convinced.
Hold on.
Here's
you
the
think
thing.
If
come
you're
on,
a head
finish.
Coach, you are the AD. My job is to put the best product on the field with what I think is the best leader.
Yeah.
So that's on me.
Yeah.
I don't need some guy in New York telling me, "Nah, go fly to this one and go to this one and talk to this guy and go meet in a private." Come on.
The benefit of it, and this is real, the search committee has a better temperature of every coach in the country. They can make a call to an agent and say, hey, is your guy happy at such and such school? Easier than Sturt can pick up a phone and go, because then he has to call that AD. And he says, I want to interview
you.
They
all have agents.
Totally. So this is it's a big agent. It's a big
get
agent
used.
Scam.
You're going to get used anyway.
Oh, that's true. They get used by the search committee and the agents and,
that's
and everybody.
That's what I'm saying.
But, yeah, no, it's I'm with you. They shouldn't do
all
it.
All right, I'm off my soapbox.
I'm with you. I agree with you. I'm telling you what they say, and I don't agree with it, but I also know it's not going to stop. So everyone who's going hemming and hawing about the search committee, I hear it. I've written it. It's not going to change because they're all getting paid, baby, and it's college athletics.
Follow
and
the money.
And money makes money, and that's what's going to keep happening. And it also gives a layer of protection, perhaps, in the eyes of an athletic department, because if you go out and bomb a hire, fail it miserably, and you don't hire a search committee, then you're the school that did.
You're the guy.
It. You're the one that broke out.
Yeah.
On a different path.
It's on you.
And
that's
you got
what I'm
shelled
saying.
For it.
I want somebody with guts to say this is my decision.
I think
win,
Missouri fans
lose
yeah,
draw.
I think Missouri fans would be happy with just a hire they're excited about.
So who's that going to be? Let's jump into
question.
It. All right. So let's give a quick rundown. You know, let's not go too in detail, but give me some names and a little bit of a resume on these guys.
Well, Sturk is going to interview a bunch of guys, and I'll remind people
that. Or is the search committee going to do that?
No, Sturk will interview
them. Oh, okay, thanks.
And believe he's going to do that. You know, it seems like we have enough information to believe, I can't, you know, say this 100%, but we think he's doing it in Atlanta. He's flying in and out of Atlanta and doing rounds of interviews. And his status has been, you know, kind of what he did with basketball. He likes to see a lot what's out there. It doesn't necessarily mean that every name we hear he's going to go higher. Another thing, this hasn't really, people are going, why is this taking so long? It just started.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, look at Florida State.
And guys are in championship games, too.
A lot of interested parties are coaching in games this weekend, which makes things really difficult to try to find guys to talk to them. So that's going on, too. The name that I think, if you could just nail it today and be done with it, walk away, Sturk says, this is what I meant when I said we need to be better, and everybody would say, okay, is Boise State's Brian Harsin. I don't know if they can get him. His buyout's really low. His salary, Missouri could double it, basically what he's going to make over the next 5 years. He inherited a really good program at Boise State, but it's gotten better under him in 6 years there. He's putting guys in the NFL. He's an offensive mind background, and he might be interested in leaving. He's talked kind of tried to get in the mix at Tennessee, kind of tried to get in the mix at Oregon. I'm not sure he would leave. Maybe he's laying low for a Pac-12 job or what he feels like is a premier job, although Tennessee's not a premier job anymore. That would be the guy that if they can stick him, bring him in, then I think Stark could walk away and say, hey, we got a guy who matches the description that I described. That's the no-brainer. After there, things get a little more crazy.
Who else?
Well, a lot of people in that realm of kind of, is this guy better than Stark? We'll get to those. The other two guys that people are going to talk about, but I don't know that they're realistic, are Mike Norvell at Memphis and Lane Kiffin at FAU, your personal favorite Lane.
I love
Dan
Lane
is very
Kiffin.
Much on the Lane train.
I figured, hey, if we're going to go for it, let's just go. If we're going to go down, let's go down. You know?
I'm not as big of a fan of Lane as you. I didn't cover Lane at Tennessee, but I was there for the post-Lane teams.
Oh, I can only imagine. And, what was it like?
He's either beloved or despised. And
let me ask you this.
Probably somewhere in the middle.
How good was his recruiting class?
Oh, he recruits, man. Probably doesn't get enough for credit for how well he recruits.
You bet.
And he's known as a good recruiter. He also knows offense. My God.
Bingo.
Beautiful offense.
He's a name. He would excite the fan base.
And he would get people
fired up.
That's
what I'm saying. I'm not sure if you get a guy from Boise State. See, you're locked into this, right?
Right.
You know these guys. You know the buyouts. You know their history. You know what's happening with this. And I'm not saying that fans wouldn't find out about Boise State or the guy from this place or that place, but if you said Lane Kiffin to the average sports fan and a guy that follows Mizzou, and when I say follows, like checks it out every Saturday and maybe buys a ticket and goes down and sees him, oh, cool, that's fun. You say, hey, Lane Kiffin. They go, oh, whether you like him or not, your ears perk up and there's interest and there's excitement. And I think that cannot be overlooked, because what's happening right now at Mizzou, there is not a lot of buzz, especially with basketball, what's happening. But with what is gone on, I just think you have to make a buzz-type hire. And I get it. What you're saying is right. The guy from Boise, great credentials, makes sense, fits in the financial world that they're living in. But you go out and get a guy like Lane Kiffin, love him or hate him, you're going to pay attention.
You will, and you also have to be ready for the Lane Kiffin baggage that could come with that. I don't hate it as much as I did the last time around. The last time around, you know, when they were looking and Lane's, it was too soon.
For sure.
And too close to what happened at USC, too close to what happened. You know, he went to Tennessee for 1 year and then bolted for his dream job.
And
I left
can
a lot of people,
fans
a lot of
would
people
say that he's going to use
crush
this as
there.
Yes,
yeah,
stepping
always
stone,
that
and
fear.
He's gone.
I know someone who covers Lane at FAU, like the one guy who covers, and he does a great job. And talking to him, he says, I don't know about Mizzou for Lane for a few reasons. One, apparently Lane like hates being in the cold.
Who likes it?
He despises it.
Okay.
So he wants to be in Florida or California. His kids are in California. He wants to be able to have direct flights to California. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. Another one being that he's probably going to be interested and have interest in Florida State. And the other one is that you got to see what's going on with Sexton. Sexton is Lane's agent, Jimmy Sexton, the guy we mentioned earlier. He's also Mike Norvell's agent at Memphis. He's also Will Healy's agent, who's the guy we're going to talk about, who's at Charlotte. So what Sexton does is he lines guys up where he wants them, and he pressures all these different schools against each other. I would not be shocked. I think Mike Norvell probably, if he's going to leave Memphis, probably wants to go to either Ole Miss or Florida State. So Kiffin could go to one or the other. And then, you know, one of those schools could be looking at Will Healy, who's like this up-and-coming, really exciting guy at Charlotte. And I don't know that Kiffin and Norvell are the right fit for Missouri. I think Norvell is a great coach. I also think it's a little weird to hire the coach that Memphis hired when the coach you just fired turned Memphis down.
Right.
Which is how they got to Norvell. They wanted Odom. And Odom picked Mizzou over Memphis, and they went and hired Norvell. So a lot of people could get over that, sure. But I just don't know if I'm Norvell, I can either go to Ole Miss and have all my Memphis recruits come with me, or I can go to Florida State, which I think is probably the best place in the mix to maybe get to play for a national championship, which is why I like Will Healy as a candidate for Mizzou. And people are going, who is Will Healy? Read up on this guy a little bit. He's incredibly young. He's like 34 years old. He is baby-faced. He looks like he's about 12. I don't think he could get a beer in this place without being carded three times. But he is this Dabo Sweeney-like protege, big energy, incredible positivity, offense, former Richmond quarterback. He got his start at University of Tennessee Chattanooga, where he was a quarterback's coach, a receiver's coach, a recruiting director, and landed two top five FCS classes there. He goes to Austin Peay. Austin Peay, I mean, for those who don't know, it's a joke. They're one of the worst, Division I football program in the country. He doesn't win a game his first year. And then they come back and have a winning season, a great, remarkable season, win more games than they ever have his second year. He gets, you know, it's a top recruiting class there. And Charlotte comes and says, man, we're starting our program. We want to get this guy. They bring him in already. You know, in the short history of Charlotte, he has got him to a bowl game. They're going to a Bahamas Bowl. He's turned their locker rooms after wins into these dance parties that look like raves. He announces the bowl trip in scuba gear. He's a relentless recruiter. I mean, relentless. He does a great job of identifying talent. He's been able to get a good staff, young staff, but a good staff around him because he trusts them and he doesn't kill him work-wise. He's young. It would be a risk, but I think if you're talking about energy, and that's the word Sturt kept mentioning, energy, enthusiasm, it makes you think of Kiffin. It makes me think of Healy. And it would be a risk because the guy's young. He hasn't coached at this level. But it would also be an investment in Mizzou to say, we see this guy as an up-and-coming. I mean, everybody thinks this guy's the next big thing. We see him. We identify him. We're going to grow with him. And we're going to give him the kind of contract that makes him want to come do this with us before we miss a chance to get a guy like this. So that would be – that. Those are my names. And then there are a lot of names I look at and go, man, I don't know that that's going to move the needle or be any better than what Missouri just got rid of.
I'm curious, and this is brought to you by STLCriminalDefense.com, Henderson and Watercutty, Ben Fred Fridays. I'm curious from their perspective, a coach's perspective, how attractive is the Mizzou job now?
I think it's more attractive than it was when Gary Pinkel resigned, and that's a credit to Barry Odom. You know, that's one thing I think Barry always struggled with, and I get it. He always wrestled with, do I embrace Gary, as the guy who is, A, the reason I'm here and created this foundation at Mizzou, or do I distance myself from Gary because of the way things ended? You know, the protest, obviously, I think Gary, if he would have been locked in, might have handled that differently, probably would have, and would have not let it get to the level it did. But he was, I don't want to say checked out, but he was slipping there toward the end. And even those who have a lot of appreciation and respect for Gary would tell you that. It was not a Gary Pinkel coach program by the time he walked away. And Barry, I think, always wrestled with that. He wanted to say he inherited a really bad situation, and then he also wanted to talk about everything he learned from Gary, and there was always kind of a friction there. I wish he would have had a better maybe working relationship with Gary as he was the coach and as things progressed, because I think there were things that Gary could have helped him with.
For sure.
You know, like Damani Cross, for example. I don't know that Damani Cross would have been hired at Mizzou if Barry would have asked Gary for his thoughts on that. Gary didn't – I never got the impression Gary wanted to be involved, like, every day. But I think he would have liked a little bit more of a back and forth than he had, and I think it would have been beneficial. So – is the situation better recruiting-wise? It should be. You know, there's distance, there's time between those events in 2015 and now. And you got to think, too, you're not recruiting guys like me and you, age-wise, who remember it like it was yesterday.
Right.
You're recruiting young teenagers who a lot of them probably haven't even heard of
sure.
it.
Sure.
So I think
it's a fresh start.
I think that's a better thing. The one thing I hear from coaches around this area when they talk about Mizzou, and it's not a knock on them, they're being honest, Mizzou is seen as kind of boring and a little dry and, you know, not exciting. And so I'm with you on that. You think it's Kiffin. I think it's Healy. But they need somebody who moves the needle. Who
we both agree they need energy.
Yes. They need someone who can go in there and get guys fired up. And for all the people who want to gripe about fun on the field and, oh, why are they dancing? And, oh, their jerseys aren't traditional. Well, you know what players like? They like to be fun. They like to be fresh. They like to have a good time. And it doesn't mean they're playing sloppy football or not winning games. But you have to have some energy. You have to have a little bit of swagger. And that's what I think Mizzou needs to consider right now. Odom, he wasn't lacking energy. I don't mean to put it that way. But there's a perception around Mizzou right now that it's kind of dull. And if you're gonna move the needle recruiting, then you got to change that.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. College basketball, this is brought to you by stlcriminaldefense.com, Henderson and Watercutty. How about SLU? 7-1. Jordan Goodwin telling, it was Travis Ford yesterday on a couple days ago on a podcast with me. Visits every week for fans that don't know, but he said Jordan Goodwin is the best guard I've ever coached in terms of rebounding. He had 19 boards in their last game against Southern. And they've got Tulane this weekend. That won't be easy. That's out in Phoenix. And then they've got Auburn, Final Four team, so that won't be easy. But I think if you told them before this game you're going to be 7-1, they would have taken it. On the flip side, and I'll get your comment on both of these, but Konzo Martin, I'll tell you what, that's one of the worst losses two nights ago that Mizzou has ever had at Mizzou Arena. That was awful what they saw the other night. And that right now, that's reeling in 2019, and they've got to turn that thing around quickly.
That we'll start with Mizzou because it's fresher on my brain right now, I guess. But I think that has to be rock bottom for this team. There's no lower than that. Konzo knows that. I mean, you saw it in his press conference. He just kept saying how he's going to remember this loss forever. They're in a tough spot. And first of all, just say anyone who's clamoring about Konzo getting fired, check out the contract. He can't be fired.
No.
So
he's not going anywhere.
And he's not going to be, and he shouldn't be.
No.
But he's got a problem on offense, and they don't seem to have the answer right now to figure out how to score. And if they're not going to be, if the offense is going to be clunky, then their defense has to be really good. And right now it's soft, and that's what's bothering him the most. They're just not, they don't look like they have that edge. And I thought last night, or in that game, you saw them. They didn't give up, but they didn't look right. And Konzo talked about it. You know, you got Jeremiah Tillman hitting Mark Smith accidentally in the head, but the two of them go for their own rebound when nobody else is in the area. Drew Smith fouls out with 10 minutes left in the game, and he's there supposed to be their leader because he just won't stop swiping at passes, trying to get lazy steals. They didn't look locked in, and they haven't. I was at that tournament in Kansas City, and it's really the script has been followed every game. They get down by 10 points right out of the gate, and then they try to fight back, and it's not enough. They did come back against Charleston Southern, whatever the hell their name was, and then they let it go again.
Yeah.
So, they have to do some soul searching. They've got to figure out a way to. I think still a lot of it comes down to Jeremiah Tillman. Again, two quick fouls. He came back better in the second half. But if your game plan is neutralized in the first half of games, you better have a backup. And the main thing, I think, is that they got to start hitting some threes.
Yeah.
I mean, they have.
They're so offensively challenged.
When they went
challenged
to the tournament
right
under Konzo, man, they hit threes.
Yeah.
And there are guys right now who just keep shooting and shooting who probably shouldn't be shooting as much as they are. And they're taking easy. They're taking soft threes. Like not open threes, not competitive threes, threes that are, we don't have a better option, let's jack a three. They've got to start getting to the basket. They've got to start getting the ball to Tillman. There was one point they gave him the ball, four times in the post in a row, and he scored 8 points. Now, he's got to be on the floor to do that, but they also have to find a way to get him the ball. I like that he's starting Xavier Pinson. I think he's the one player who's guaranteed to be exciting when he's on the floor. But he's got to play better, too. If he's going to take on that role, he can't have a game like he did that night. He was terrible. And combine that with Drew Smith being bad, and that's going to be tough. They have not yet found a way consistently to have their best three players, you know, Drew Smith, Jeremiah Tillman, and Mark Smith, play consistently on the same night. And if they do that, they'll be the team we saw in the first few games. But man, they've got to get it together. And they've got a big game coming up not too far from now here in St. Louis in that Bragging Rights game. And Illinois hasn't been perfect. They're taking their bruises and taking some lumps. But I'm telling you, if they show up like that here to St. Louis, they're going to get ran out of the gym.
SLU, very quickly.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk a little baseball. But, you know, SLU, 7-1, and it's not pretty.
It's not always pretty. It's rarely pretty with Travis's teams, but that's kind of their identity, and they're okay with that because they defend and they rebound like a bunch of over-caffeinated guys who are all about it. And they've got a little more shooting now. I mean, I like that he can put Gibson Jimerson in when they fall behind
Perkins.
By 10, and the dude looks for a shot. I mean, he's in there to score, and everybody knows it, and it's like, well, good luck stopping it. I think that's a real weapon for them as he gets more mature. I love the way Goodwin and French are playing, man. They're leading by example. Goodwin is possessed. You know, those rebounds are outstanding. I mean, just the pure will. It's will. That's all it is. I love the way when he screws up, and it doesn't happen all that often, he's the first one to go around and pick his teammates up. I mean, he's leading, and you're seeing it. You know, you've talked about it on the broadcast. I've written about it. I know Travis gets tired of talking about it, but their one Achilles heel, and it's a big one, is their ability to not help themselves in the free throw department.
Cost them at some point.
It will, and it did last year against Davidson at home. And I don't know what you do. I've almost like wondered if they should go to like the YMCA and get that one guy who is shooting free throws at lunch and have him and come
you
in and coach.
Bring him in.
You got to do something, right?
Right?
Like at some point, it's the definition of insanity. They just need their better shooters to shoot free throws better. I don't think you're going to fix French, okay? Have him make as many as he can.
Yeah.
But you got to have your Jordan Goodwin and those guys should make free throws. So I think that, you know, that's going to continue to be something they've got to work on. But, yeah, their record right now, I think they're feeling pretty good about it. And they got slapped around against Seton Hall, and they seem to be responding to it the way you'd hope they would.
It'll be interesting. They're not a big team. And I was talking to Travis about this this past week, but – you know, when you look at Goodwin, you look at French. I mean, French is not a 7-1 player.
No.
He plays like he's about 8 feet tall. He's an animal down there. Goodwin is just, as you mentioned, relentless. And they tell him, go get the ball. And
he'll go down and post guys up.
Yeah.
He's very versatile.
And when you have Collins on the floor, not a big guy. But what they're starting to get is Perkins scoring. He's ahead of where they thought he might be. And you mentioned Jimerson knocking down shots. Well, teams have to overextend, which then opens up French. So it'll be interesting how teams play them going forward. I know we're running out of time. I want to make sure we talk a little baseball. Winter meetings coming up. Cardinals have been quiet. The whole league has been quiet. Although Mike Moustakas goes to Cincinnati. I also find it interesting, and not a lot of people talked about this, but you think about what the Brewers have lost. Moustakas, Drew Pomeranz, Grandal. Those all got 4-year contracts, those three guys. Well, they were key in that stretch run for Milwaukee. So, to me, Milwaukee, you're talking about other teams that value those players to give them 4-year deals. That's a big hit to them. It's a big pickup for Cincinnati. And when you put a guy like, you know, people say, well, he can't play second base. Well, in this day and age of shifts, you can hide a guy. You know, Matt Carpenter played second base. You can position people differently in the game now, to where Mike Moustakas played, what, 40-some-odd games, I think it was, for Milwaukee, and you say, he'll be fine at second base. We can hide him. We'll shift. We'll do different things. And, they needed offense, surprisingly, of all teams. Cincinnati needed offense, and they got a big one there.
Yeah, that lineup, what happened to it was weird last year, because I think we all thought it would be better than it was, and credit to them for going out and trying to fix it. Their defense is probably going to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
I see what they're doing. They're saying our offense produces, our ballpark produces offense, helps us, so let's lean into it. Let's stick a guy who is probably not a great second baseman there, but try to shift around it, and maybe don't stop there. I mean, maybe they go get Marcelo Ozuna, another flawed defensive player.
Yeah.
Put him in the
and
outfield.
Just say we're going to roll with pitching
and offense.
And just
say we're going to pound you to death.
Right.
You know, good luck, pitchers. Don't either let them hit it out of the park or don't let them hit it at all, because
exactly.
Don't expect us to stop it if it's in the field. You know, they're going to be more competitive, I think. It'll certainly be more interesting. I like the idea of the Cardinals going after Moustakas. You and I have talked about this a ton in the past. You've always been pro Moustakas.
Yep.
I was down on him last year. I thought what the Cardinals had was better, not maybe not better, but was just as
good.
Instead
of spending that money on right. him, allocated somewhere
but then
else.
Jed Jerko ceased to exist, yep. and Matt Carpenter had a really awful year. I liked the idea of the Cardinals bringing him in, putting him at third base, and hoping Matt Carpenter bounced back. And if he did, he had a good problem to have,
yeah.
as opposed to just betting on Matt Carpenter bouncing back. Although I would not have given Mike Moustakas a 4-year, $60 million deal.
I think probably
so. Probably 1 year too long for what
no
I would have been interested
in. I would have given him 4 years 2 years ago. That would have been nice.
Well, yeah, then you would have looked smart.
Yeah.
But now, I don't know if I would have loved that deal for the Cardinals. And the Cardinals weren't going to play him at second base. So, look, the Reds pounce on the opportunity. I'm sure a lot of teams are like, well, we would have liked to see what happened with Moustakas. He was going to go one, but he played himself out of that realm. So good for him for betting on himself
yeah.
for two straight years.
Made $62 million
going
out
and
of
getting
it.
Payday for it. Everyone says the Brewers are rebuilding, right? That's what the talk is.
Especially
now.
If they trade Hader.
That's going to be the tell, I think.
Yeah.
Although I can see why they would trade him.
I could too.
Because
think
I don't know
usage
what are you going to get from that guy 3 years from now, 2 years from now. This season, they've ridden him so hard.
Exactly.
So if you can get players that help your team and say, hey, thanks for the awesome pitching, Hader, that would probably be the wise move considering what we've seen. But it also probably indicates that the Brewers are willing to take a step back. I'm just awful cautious to write the Brewers off because I've learned
absolutely.
Too many times that they're always there. And they were. It happened again this season. But look, you added Christian Yelich, and that window is not all that big with him. Don't give up on this team. Like they should be building now. What they do with it, you know, are they going to rebuild? Are they going to kind of refresh? Or are they going to actually rebuild? Because don't rebuild with your MVP. That's crazy.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, curious about that. And then the Cardinals are kind of just doing nothing.
It's early though.
I'll give them credit though. Like and people will bark about this, and I've already seen it in the chats. Like I actually appreciate the Cardinals explaining where they stand as opposed to like giving off this idea that they're going to go do a bunch of stuff and then not doing it. Like they've said, look, we're going to have most of our team back and we're not really sure where the additions are to make, but we're interested in looking around at it. And fans go, what do you mean you don't have that? How can you not change the offense? How can you not blah blah blah? Well, they're going to do something, I would imagine, but I don't have a good idea of what it is, and I think hopefully we'll get a better feel for that at winter meetings a little bit.
I'm really curious, and I don't think it's gotten enough play, and maybe you disagree with me, but you know, there's pending labor issues, and it was talked about a lot last year because guys weren't getting signed, and it was going into spring training, and yep. Harper was late, and some of the bigger names were late. Probably will be the case this year, too. I mean, just the way that you watch the marketplace and how it's developing.
We mentioned Jimmy Sexton. Look who Boris has this year.
Exactly. So, you know, you never know. I mean, next week you might have a bunch of signings. Who knows?
Sure.
But I just don't know if that's getting enough talk because it's coming and it's on the horizon and it could be nasty. And I wonder if that will be the talk of what's going on in baseball next week. Now, I asked John Mozeliak, I said, do you think, this is pretty much right after the season, I said, will teams be doing different deals with the understanding that there could be a stoppage? And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, no, I think it's going to be basically business as usual, and, you know, we're planning on having baseball. And by God, it's a $14 billion business. There better be baseball. Everybody's making money. So if they don't play baseball, shame on them, on all of them. So figure it out. But I just wonder if that will be the underlying theme of next week when a baseball fan that loves this game like me would rather hear about, oh, I wonder if the Cardinals might do this or where's this guy going? I love the offseason. I think it's fun. I just wonder if that's going to be the underlying theme next week.
You get mad at me when I write about this and then you bring it up and say, why isn't anybody talking about it? I'm on to you. You said, write about baseball. I don't write about this work stoppage fear.
I give you some trouble on that stuff.
It's a huge deal. And it's a huge.
Do you think that'll be the theme?
I think it's going to come up, especially if everybody's sitting around not making moves. What else are we supposed to talk about? It's a real thing, and you're already seeing the signs of it. You know, MLB trying to decrease the number of minor league teams
yes.
is a sign of it. Minor league players, MLB says, okay, we'll pay these guys more. And then a day later, you know, I'm being paraphrasing, but, you know, soon after they say, well, we're just going to get rid of a bunch of teams.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you know, this is going to come to a head at some point. Free agency has become something the players are used to be live for, play for. And now it's almost scary. And that's not going
to
change.
But the landscape changed. You know?
Yeah. And the players have to be smart. And the players have to stop fighting for money for guys who don't deserve it and start fighting for money for guys who do. And that's something that means they're going to have to fight for younger guys to get paid more. They're going to have to fight for guys to reach free agency sooner. And that's going to have to be selfless of them because a lot of the guys doing it are going to be guys who are beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going to take players being willing to fight for guys who to make money who are not them doing the fighting. And they're really I don't think it's afraid, but they have not done that. Or if they did, they would have been fighting for minor leaguers sooner. You know, these guys have the sense of once I'm there, I want mine. And I get it. You know, I understand the concept, but if they keep with that path, it's not going to work. So that's going to be a big conversation. I think the other thing that's going to be a big conversation at winter meetings is an update on what the hell's going on at the Astros. You know, people are talking about this thing.
And more is going to leak next week. No question about it.
I ran into Luke Voit at a Blues game, and I won't, I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. But I said, well, what do you make of this? He plays for the Yankees, right? He's like, oh man, people knew, you know, people knew that this was going on with them. So more and more people are going to be talking.
Carlos Beltran has to address
together,
the media.
Yes. Alex Cora. I mean, Rob Manfred, I would think, is going to want to have this thing wrapped up sooner rather than later.
He's going to drop the hammer on some people.
It's going to be a big topic, and I think that will be another thing. But you know, again, once again, another winter meetings where we might not be talking about moves as much as the state of baseball and the ball and what's going on with the actual baseball and cheating in the game
and minor leagues.
Yeah, it's going to be a very probably political winter meetings, I would imagine.
Final thing, you have the baseball writers dinner coming up. We should probably address that because you're a part of that group that puts on that dinner. And let's tell people how to get involved and what's coming up this year.
Yeah, it's coming up, and we can get you. Maybe we can put a link to the site for tickets on the site with the podcast if you're up for that. It's a chance to really just gather, celebrate the year that was in baseball, and it all benefits scholarships that the baseball writers chapter here locally gives out. We're one of the really only two dinners left. It's us in New York, and we do the dinner and bring in Cardinals and bring in, you know, Cardinals greats to raise money for scholarships for student journalists in all different capacities. So what I always tell people is that if they're tired of me, you know, they should come to the dinner, buy a ticket, and they can give a scholarship for the guy or girl who replaces me. You know, I was a scholarship recipient back in the day, so you never know. You know, you could push one of us out of a gig by showing up for the dinner, and I would hope that people get a chance to check it out. It's a great Christmas gift. We're gonna have Colton Wong there for his Gold Glove. We're gonna have, you know, it's gonna be a good time, and I hope that people who haven't been will come check it out. Great Christmas gift if you're looking for somebody in the family who's a big Cardinals fan.
What's the best way to get those tickets?
MetroTix. If you just go to MetroTix, or you can go to if you just Google, very easy, you know, St. Louis Baseball Writers Association. The link will take you right there, and I'll get you a link too to put on the site.
We definitely will do it. Awesome stuff. We'll catch up next Friday.
Thanks, man. Good times.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.